Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. Today's program will be another in my Health Challenges series. My guest is Leah Hoteling. Hoteling is probably best known as co-owner of the highly successful and popular Felicia's Atomic Lounge, located in Ithaca, New York, which closed in 2015 after 11 years. She's now co-owner of the equally popular Trumansburg, New York restaurant, Felicia's Hive 45, which opened last spring. But in September 2015, Leah was diagnosed with breast cancer, and we'll discuss her journey through diagnosis, treatment, and the lingering and life-changing aftermath on today's program. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Now, within days of closing our beloved Felicia's, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. Tell us the story.
Yeah, it's a whirlwind. So on the 28th of August, that was the last night of the lounge being open, and Amelia and I had already set up all these appointments to get everything taken care of so we could drop down to Obamacare because we had pretty much a Cadillac plan to take care of ourselves. And we thought we need to save money and we can't afford to be paying this amount of money for insurance. So our last appointment was mammograms on September 3rd. And it was a normal appointment for me. I went into the back to get a diagnostic, but then the man came in who is a breast specialist and said, "You have complicated breasts." And I'd never heard that before. It's the one thing I never heard, but something just clicked and I just thought, I have cancer.
Wow, so you immediately jumped to that conclusion.
Hmm. Yeah, I just went immediately to that point. It just hit me that something
But it did take a few days to find out, or at least 24 hours for them to...
Yeah, for confirmation. What happens, it's the Wendy Breast Clinic in Rochester, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I recommend it to every woman to go there mm-hmm. because you can get immediate results. But I would normally go in and get aspirations on different cysts that I had in my breasts because I had a lot of cysts. And this particular day, he came in and said that, got the ultrasound out, and immediately went to my lymph node. And then the world kind of just crashed in a little bit. And I'd seen my breast tissue many times before, and it just looked weird.
But the thing that I found really interesting, that you were diagnosed at first with stage zero, non-invasive, and yet they recommended surgery and, you know, getting rid of that left breast.
Yeah, that's, I think it's a little controversial in many cases that you get DCIS, which is ductal carcinoma in situ. It means it hasn't burst out of your ducts. So originally that was my case. But my case was so riddled with it that they said, you know, we can't be sure because I have large breasts. They're D size. And there was no way he could say for sure that there is no invasive cancer in there.
Uh-huh.
So, and it was such a large section that to do a lumpectomy, I would have had to have a lot of surgeries to have it basically back to normal.
Yeah,
so I decided not to.
The fix would have been worse than... But they discovered that they had to take out more lymph glands and lymph nodes, too, during that surgery.
Yes.
So that must have been a shock to you, too.
Yeah, at some point on the road, I expected somebody to come in and say, "You're done. This is where we stop." But it just kept going. At first it was, it's stage zero, and then it was, oh, it's stage one, and then it was... Oh, wait, it's invasive. And then it's in two of your lymph nodes. So it was just this road that just didn't stop.
And then you had genetic testing and found out that you had the gene. Tell us about that, you know, gave you propensity to end up with other cancers. Talk about that.
Yeah, so genetic testing is fascinating. And I was very naive. And I was very innocent as far as all of cancer goes. And so when I sat down, I just thought, this is awesome. They're going to tell me what to do if I have a gene. And the geneticist said, no, you don't want any of these genes. So the one I have is RAD51C. And when it first came back that I had RAD51C, she said, we don't know a lot about this. We're just watching it. And 6 months later, it basically came down the road that you need to have your ovaries out if you have RAD51C. So that's kind of where I am with that now.
Oh, the God, that, I can't believe somebody who is perfectly healthy, opening a new restaurant, excited about life, suddenly all this is thrown at you. And what's more, I have to mention this. You say that your mother was diagnosed with breast cancer 6 weeks before you were.
Yes.
Talk to us about that. How did you react to that in the first place?
That was, same thing with my mom. It was just routine mammogram, and she called me and said, I have breast cancer. Hers was the size of a BB, but hers was also HER2 positive. That's what mine is, too. And HER2 positive is a growth hormone in your breast that just is going a little haywire and procreating way too much. So hers was the size of a BB, and she had the same exact treatment as me. She had chemo. She had radiation. She didn't have to have a mastectomy, thank goodness. But everything else was the same. It's a very aggressive form of cancer.
Yeah. So she gets diagnosed 6 weeks before you. Did you talk to her? Did they recommend that the daughter, you, should go get tested even before you were diagnosed?
No, her too isn't, not yet. They're not saying it's hereditary. I will not be surprised if it comes down the pike that, yes, indeed, this could be hereditary. But I basically got a snapshot of what was going to happen to me through my mother. I had to keep it in because I needed to go and tell her. So I didn't want to tell her on the telephone because she was really troubled about her own diagnosis. So then hearing, my daughter has breast cancer and she has to have a mastectomy. That's pretty insane.
Oh, my God.
So we waited until we could go and see her. She thought I was just coming for a visit.
And it was quite a visit, memorable visit. Now, let's talk about the fact that you started chemo about a month after this surgery to remove your breast. Tell us about chemo. It sounds like it was hell.
Oh, yeah.
And it lasted for many more months than I would have ever thought.
Yes. I had 18 rounds, so 18 weeks of it. The HER2 gets Herceptin, so that's for a year. That's targeted therapy, but there's not a lot of bad side effects to that one. That one is an easy one. But the other was carboplatin and Taxotere, which are treacherous. They basically kill you. They kill all of your fast-growing cells. Within 10 days, my hair was falling out from the first treatment. It was insane. So it's just when you get used to, I have no breasts. What's going on? And then your hair starts to fall out.
God.
And I didn't have an immune system. It immediately tanked out my immune system. So I had zero neutrophils, which are what's needed to fight off any infection. Some people end up in the hospital. If they get just a common cold, you could actually die when you're neutropenic. And I lucked out, and I didn't get sick once. And I just kind of made myself work over at the building, even if it was for an hour a day. But it was torturous. You can't taste. Your energy level is very low. You lose all your hair from like your nose hairs to the hair on your head,
all
your eyebrows.
All the hair on your body, I'm sure.
Everything is it's just this weird kind of state of like you're removed from society.
Yeah.
Basically.
Did you feel like you were disintegrating? I mean, it sounds like your whole body was just leaving you while you were standing there. Maybe that proves that you really have a spirit.
Maybe. I did. I felt like there was pieces of me that were erased and they'll never come back. And they won't be replaced by anything else. But then I had to be okay with it. Like, it's okay if a piece of me is removed, I am still the same.
Yeah.
Like, coming to grips with trying to figure that out, trying to wrap your mind around, who am I?
And this was such a rapid process. Were they able to give you any kind of forewarning about what to expect for chemotherapy, or is it just, you never know how somebody's going to react, right, in some ways?
I think they give you some information, but the fact is they don't give you a lot of information because if you knew all of these things that could potentially go wrong, why would you do it? Even if it could save, like, this HER2 is aggressive. There's you do this or you die. So 10 years ago, a woman with HER2 positive cancer would probably be gone in 2 months.
Wow.
If it burst out of your lymph nodes, because it's that aggressive. It just likes to travel. So you kind of don't, it's almost like you can't hear them saying these are all the side effects that could happen because what you're thinking about is mortality. You're thinking about yourself. It's like one of the most selfish states to be in, but it's like a self-preserved state of just what's happening to me?
Yeah.
How can I stay alive?
And just, you really are sort of living in the moment then, right?
Yes.
Maybe for the first time in some people's lives.
I think so. I think through chemo, I've never lived more in the moment than while I was in chemo, because it just stopped you. There was nothing you could do. For especially somebody like me who's very physical. I'm a very physical worker. I'm always walking. I don't sit down that often. So it was just, it just stops you in your tracks.
Wow.
You have to give in.
Talk about the support that you had during this. Or did you not want support? Or did you just want Amelia, your partner, to be there? Did you have friends? Did you have support groups or anything?
I have a really small group of people that I lean on. But I don't do it a lot. I'm not somebody who reaches out too often. But the people who I surround myself with in times of crisis like that, they just get it. They understand it. They know that if I drop off the planet for 2 or 3 months and then I just pop back up, that it's going to be okay. I had people that were persistent. You have people that you would not expect to be persistent. And then the people that you think they're going to be knocking on the door any minute, and they're gone. And you have to accept that.
I have heard so many people who go through any kind of illness say that.
Yeah.
People are afraid. They don't know what to say.
Yes.
They're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing, I think.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, cancer, just the word, when somebody comes in the room, it's like cancer is in the room. It's like there's no room for anybody else.
Yeah.
You have to make it. It's a process. It is a huge process.
So that this chemo that you were on, it's no longer experimental, right? I mean, do we know if it worked? Or do you now have to wait forever to find out if you're going to go into remission or go out of remission?
Well, Herceptin is great. It's a wonderful drug, is what I can say. I don't think it's been here long enough for studies to come back on. I think with something like cancer, that studies have to be 10 years and over. So they're still getting information about what good is this doing? How long does it work for? And they don't know, but I think it stopped whatever cancer was growing in me.
Yeah.
For the time being.
You know what I've always wanted to ask somebody with cancer, and I probably have, but how do you keep your humanity during this time when you're practically living in a sterile landscape of medicine and strangers?
Yeah. That's a good question. It's barbaric is the word I used a couple times. Mm. Just like what they do, that they remove an entire piece of your body and there's 100 stitches there. And so many people have seen me naked, strangers. You have to give in. For me, I had to just completely give in to trusting these people are experts in what they do. They know this disease. I know me. So between the two of us, or between my team and myself, we'll be able to figure this out. But it happened pretty quickly for me to just give in and just surrender to what was happening, because there was no escaping. It's not like I could just walk out the door. I can't. I have to just face it.
Yeah.
So having trust in my doctors, this is why I went to Rochester as well. I felt like it was important to have doctors that dealt specifically with what I was going through. So I went to a breast surgeon. I didn't go to a general surgeon. And I sought out doctors in Rochester for oncology as well.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Leah Hoteling. We're talking about her cancer. This is a Health Challenges show, and we're talking about her breast cancer that she's still going through. You're still going through this. You also had to have radiation. Tell us about that. You resisted that.
Oh, that was another one. I just kept expecting somebody to say, you don't need to do this.
Mm. Well, tell us why you do need to do it, if it looks like the chemo may have worked.
Well, what happens is if there's any activity, any cancerous activity in your scar or anywhere in that breast tissue, and when you see, like, my breast is, like, it's very large, and the surgery that got done was basically around the size of a basketball. So that's the size of my scar. That's the size of any like breast tissue that could possibly be left over. So what they want to do is they want to radiate that area to make sure if there's cancer cells in there, we're killing those cells and anything else that's in the pathway of radiation. I greatly underestimated radiation. I thought this is going to be easy. Can't be worse than chemo. And for me, it felt like it was. It exhausted me on a level that the chemo couldn't even touch.
Really? Well, yeah. What do you attribute that to? Did you expect that? Did they explain?
Oh, yeah. They warn you every single, because you go every single day for, how many weeks did I go?
Didn't you say 8 weeks or something like that?
I think it was 6 or 8 weeks. Yeah. Every day, except for weekends, you sit on this table, you lay down, and they hit me in 4 different spots. Because the location was so large, I had a pretty big sunburn is what it basically looks like.
Did it feel like a burn when the treatments were happening?
Well, some of the good news is I can't feel any of that. It's all completely numb. So from middle chest down to like bicep is numb. So I couldn't feel it. It got very red. But if there was any cancer cells in there, they're definitely dead.
Yeah, and it didn't kill you, so I guess that's the good news.
No.
Now, you say you still have long-term swelling and you can't feel a lot in your chest still, right? How do you compensate for that? I mean, is it something that you say, I'm going to just live with that, or is it constantly on your mind and sort of making you resentful?
It's constantly on my mind, and it makes me very sad, is what happens, is I get frustrated, and I know that this is my new body, and I don't particularly like it. I don't like that I can't feel it. That's a huge button for me. You could take away the whole breast, that's okay, but I can't feel it, and I can't do certain things with my arm. Like I can't have it above my head for very long. It's like today I was tiling a floor, and I had to be very aware that my left arm can't be below my heart for too long, because what happens is fluid goes down my arm, and then when you remove lymph nodes, which are drains, they can't drain back out.
So you could end up with real edema.
Yeah.
Horrible swelling.
Yeah, so I have a sleeve that I wear whenever I'm working, and I just have to be really aware. And honestly, I don't want to be that aware of my body.
Yeah.
I want to just be able to do what I want when I want, right?
Exactly.
That's what we all always want.
Yeah.
But this is also, it's aging too. It's just like we're all going to get older.
Mm-hmm.
All of our bodies will break down. So this is me fighting against cancer, and I'm sure it's just fighting against my own mortality and the fact that I am aging too. So it's just all of those things coupled together, and I fight very hard against it. Very, very hard.
We all learn at some point that we really can't fly, right?
Right.
I mean, that's exactly how I started feeling about some of my medical stuff, too. Now, you say you never feel 100%, so that's got to be something horrible. And also, I often wonder, any little tweak, any little problem, any little pain, does it give you anxiety all the time?
Yes, absolutely. So I didn't know anxiety before this. I had no idea that I didn't know anxiety, but I knew panic because I'm the queen of a panic attack.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And it just makes you feel like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. And then 5 minutes later, it's gone. Well, after a couple months of this, I think we were coming back from chemo, and I started to feel what I thought was panic. And I said to Amelia, my God, this panic attack is not going away. It just feels like the end of the world. And she said, that's because it's anxiety. And I remember my response was, oh, my God, I am so sorry. Because all those times where you have said that you're anxious about something, I thought it was panic. And I thought you were making a big deal about something that only took 5 minutes. I didn't know it just, like, sat with you. And it does. It sits with you.
Uh-huh.
So I had no idea what anxiety was. So I'm still learning how to cope with it. I do a lot of pacing is my thing. Like, if I start feeling weird I have a weird pain, and immediately my head will go to, oh, is that cancer? And I'll pace around and try to think myself out of it. And it's another one. I just have to sit with it.
Yeah. Did they recommend you going to support groups and talking to other cancer patients? Because I have talked to people who say, you know, I'm alive and I'm not going to let this take over my life. You know,
right.
I mean, as if you can will that. But
yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to get nervous every time I...
But I've talked to a lot of people with cancer, but I'm not too much, I think, of a group person.
I understand that.
I like sharing. I like writing has really helped me out a lot, too. And I have no problem ever saying how I feel, which is it's really good. Because a lot of people, I've met quite a few people who never even talk about cancer ever again. They don't want to.
Yeah.
They don't. When I ask, so what kind of cancer, or, you know, what was your receptor? Some people don't even know. And I respect that. And I understand that from their perspective. But that's just not me. So when somebody actually asks how I am, I'm very honest about it.
Yeah.
I think I'm more honest than I've ever been. Because, you know, we're in Wegmans. Hey, Leah, how are you? Great, how are you? And you just keep walking.
Yeah.
Well, now
yeah.
It's like, if you really want to know, then I'm going to tell you right now how I am. I'm sorry, did that make you uncomfortable? Right? Because it does. It makes people uncomfortable, cancer.
Yeah. Well, talking about illness, I mean, that's why I started this series. I wanted people to stop thinking there's a stigma. Everybody gets
right.
sick. We all,
yes.
our bodies, we start losing parts of our bodies as we get older, and everybody gets sick at some time.
And then we don't share, and I just think
there's
so
shame.
Much knowledge.
There was shame when we were kids and when our parents were kids about cancers and other, especially mental illnesses. But, it's just unbelievable that I think people need to talk about this
they
stuff.
They do.
Now, you say that you also feel like you have post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yes.
And I hadn't heard anybody... But this is so recent that you've gone through this.
Yeah.
Do you think that will dissipate?
I'm not sure.
How does it manifest?
It's that panic and
so
that
you think
anxiety.
That's kind of post-traumatic, yeah.
Yeah, it's... You hear all this information from doctors and then the internet, which is a wonderful thing, and then it's a curse as well because you read, I have a pain in my hip. So I read breast cancer, pain in hip. HER2 positive, and then you hear about some women who have cancer in their hips.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's no matter what's happening, it kind of stops me in my tracks for maybe like 5 minutes. It will stop me, and it feels like the world is collapsing in on itself, and then it goes away. So then I just have to just keep walking through it, and I have to acknowledge that it's there because I can't not acknowledge it.
Yeah.
But I have to do it. I mean, we're kind of, I'm pretty private, but I'm also not so private. It's like we own a restaurant. We owned Felicia's. I have a blog. I'm telling everybody how I feel, but I have to keep it in check, I think, publicly.
Oh, yeah.
I can't just have a meltdown.
And you also get to choose.
Yes.
When to be public.
Yeah.
You know, with the blog and the...
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about that. You turned to writing. Had you ever done that before? Because your blog is beautiful, Leah, and we're going to give the address at the end of the show. But
thank you.
Have you discovered something new about yourself? Because really, it's impressive.
Yes. The minute I was diagnosed, I just thought I need to just write this down, write all these things down. And I did, and then what was coming out was pretty amazing. I didn't know I could articulate the words that well. But then I think when you get to something as raw as this, I think potentially we all have this in us, something that stops you in your tracks, whether it's cancer or having a newborn, right? Or losing somebody.
Or any life-changing
trauma,
life-changing, especially. Yeah.
And suddenly you have words that maybe you never had before, words to your feelings. And that's what I kept it at. As my feelings. I'm like, this is what's going on. I didn't try to put too much fact into it.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to say, this is how I'm feeling.
Well, what made you want to make it public? Because some people do write journals to get through things, but you've made yours public. That must have been gratifying, though, because you get people writing back to you, and I'm sure you've helped a lot of people who can't articulate themselves.
It feels that way. And, I think going public was two reasons. One was I don't ever want to not say there's not an elephant in the room. I always want to be the person who says, hi, it's here. I don't want to ignore it. And the other reason was maybe to keep people in the loop that I thought would want to read it, which is funny because a lot of those people never read it.
And you know that?
Yeah, it's the same way thing as the people that show up for this crisis or maybe sometimes not the people you expect to show up for the crisis. And it's totally fine because I love all of my support people.
Yeah.
So there's people all over the world that we're all connected through cancer, which in many ways I think is a beautiful thing of just like, is this what it takes? It's kind of sad that I am bald and I'm going through chemo and I'm walking through the world through different eyes and people see me through different eyes because they don't see a lesbian, right? Or they don't even see a woman. They just see a person with cancer. And I think when you take those things away and we just see each other like that, I just think that's an empowering place to be. Mm-hmm. So that happened early on, too. I saw that people were looking at me in a different way, and I just thought, this is a way to connect with people.
Right, so do you think it got you more in touch with your own humanity as well?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Is that what the positives were probably? Right?
Yes, a lot more compassion. Because I could be very mean to myself, and I'm very judgy towards other people. And this was definitely a wake-up call to what is important. And what's important is recognizing that we're all people,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because I'd be walking around Home Depot, and if it was the me that you see now, certain people are going to give me the stink eye, right? There's going to be people who feel threatened by me. But the Leah with no hair that would go in and look the same exact way except no hair, the amount of contact I had with people that would not normally even speak to me was, it stopped me.
So there's more discrimination against you as a lesbian than there was against you as somebody with cancer,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
You know, I was going to bring that up. Yeah, I know.
It's very sad.
Yeah, because you're fighting discrimination on many fronts in so many ways, as a woman, as a lesbian, as somebody with cancer.
Right.
Yeah.
And with cancer, boy, people, there was just so much love. And it just always stopped me of like, wow. So people see mortality and they see somebody very ill and they get soft.
They see a human.
But they would see me now and I would have to say, hey, I don't have a breast. And then maybe they get soft. But we just look and judge everyone all the time. We all do it, no matter who we are, even if we try not to.
Well, the moral of the story isn't shave your head, is it?
No, it sure isn't. Amelia did a good cartoon about that one. I'll show it to
that
you.
That is very interesting, though, because that's a lesson learned for all of us.
Right.
That, you know, illness does make us revert to that human state
acceptance. Yeah, I'm walking through Wegmans and somebody slams into my cart and I don't think, wow, you're out to get me. I think, I wonder if you were bald 6 months ago. I wonder if you'll be bald in another 6 months. This could be the thing that connects us, is mortality.
Yeah.
Is death.
We only have about a minute and a half left. Do you have advice for anybody who's just been newly diagnosed, and a couple key things that you think they should do that they might not know about?
Read, you know, educate yourself. But don't educate yourself too much. Just because something bad happened to somebody doesn't mean it's going to happen to you is the major thing. And find out who your tribe is and rely on them and let them take care of you and talk. Don't keep it in, because there's so much to learn. We can teach each other that it's not so bad, that maybe everything is already okay.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Can you give your blog address and any kind of contact information?
It's www.thebestworstcase.com.
That's a great, I love that.
Yeah, that's
thebestworstcase.com.
Early on, we were like, this is the best worst case scenario, isn't it?
Well, Leah Ho-Tailing, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure talking to you, and good luck.
Thank you. Wishing you
all the best for the future.
Thanks a lot.
Again, I've been talking to Leah Ho-Tailing. This has been a Health Challenges series. We've been talking about her cancer journey. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.